My name is Owen Flynn and welcome to episode 112 of the Trail Running Ireland podcast. On this week's show, we talk to the new record holder of the 130-kilometre race at the Waterfall Trail Running Festival. Ross Donovan is with us shortly. And Rene Borg from Running Coach Ireland talked to us about adapting to racing in the heat and how heat exposure can actually be a massive performance enhancer. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go. Welcome everybody to the show, and let's kick things off this week with a shout out to our younger mountain and trail runners who might be listening in, and congrats to all the under 18 junior runners who were competing this weekend for a place on the Irish National Under 18 team at the World Mountain Running Association Under 18 Mountain Running Championships in Bratislava in June. The trial race took place at Slieve na Mon in Tipperary there last Sunday, and Catelyn Redden from Laois and Finn Yor from Cork took the wins and looked to have booked their places on the plane to Slovakia with their green jersey. So well done guys, and good luck to all the coaches and the athletes as they make their final squad selection for that championship over the coming days. It was a busy weekend in Waterfall last week as well, with lots of exciting action happening. In the 25k race, Martin Keown and Eilish Piat took the wins. Congrats to Sean Meehan, who ran to victory in the 43-kilometre race, just as he did last year as well in the 130-kilometre race. He was on the show, you might remember. And Abby Ring won the 43k women's race. And in the two-day event, Eddie O'Connor took an impressive win alongside Sinead Egan, a clear winner in the women's two-day event. And in the 130-kilometre race, unfortunately, we had no female finishers. No one was able to repeat the win last year by Michelle Scott. But we did have a new course record by 49 minutes in the male race by Ross Donovan in 15 hours and 2 minutes. And Ross will be along very, very shortly to tell us all about it. Before we begin our coaching slot with Rennie, as always, many, many thanks to all of our group of patrons who support the show each episode, each month, for the price of a gel. And if you would like to help out the podcast, guys, do please pop over to Patreon, Trail Running Ireland podcast, where you can sign up and help keep the show going as we move closer to those great summer months for racing and training. Speaking of summer, let's keep the show moving on and call in our coaching expert to chat how we can actually use the heat to improve our racing and performance levels. Rene Borg from Running Coach Ireland. Rene, super to have you back. And we've got a very important topic there today, and a very useful and helpful topic for the listeners, Rene, as well. We've got the summer races on the horizon, an exciting one now next week with the Wicklow Way Relay, then your own one, Glendalough, Lap of the Gap coming up as well. It's fairly normal temperatures, I think, at home at the minute. But of course, last week we had the highest April temperature of, I think, was it 28.9 degrees in Galway. 25.9 degrees in Galway. But I'm just looking it up here as I talk to you. The highest April temperature of all time recorded in Galway. So heat is a factor that we need to be looking at in terms of our training, in terms of our racing. And it's probably one of the most misunderstood training tools in endurance sports, Rene. So it's not just about surviving these hot temperatures that might be thrown with us over the coming weeks and months, but it's about using them to be able to perform and race better.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was timely with the topic because we finally, you know, we've had, as a lot of people here in Ireland would probably agree, fairly desperate autumn winter, you know, for the most part, with very few spells of good weather. And then finally, we've had I think probably about 3 weeks where it's been primarily good, really good, which is a nice change for rainstorms and all the rest that we had. So it seemed a good time to talk a little bit about heat, training and trying to turn it around, because it's actually something that you can use to your advantage if you use it in the right way, and if you approach it like with everything else, systematically and progressively. And we have the biology for it, obviously. Even if we have grown up like yourself and myself on a northern hemispheres, so obviously we have kind of, what you say, we have some kind of adaptation to colder climates, which makes us probably less resilient to heat than people who've grown up at the equator. But the human species as a whole, is we're believed to have come from the Rift Valley, which is a very warm place, and that means, generally speaking, humanity has developed for tropical temperatures. So we have all the equipment to deal with it, but some of us might need to train back so that we can make the best of it.
Yeah, and it absolutely does deserve center stage, really, because it really does affect performance. Like, if we're running a race and temperatures are above that ideal, say, endurance sport racing temperature of, let's say, 8 to 12 degrees, as you move up higher into the mid-teens, you see an effect in performance. As you get towards 20, you see probably another 1 to 2% drop off in performance. And I'll give yourself and the listeners, Rennie, a super example. Now, on the roads, I had a guy in the squad there last week or 2 weeks ago now, running London. He's been working so hard to get sub three, Rennie, and he was in sub three shape, no doubt about it. He was in about 257, 258 shape. But there in London, it was about, I think, 19, 20 degrees as they moved through the morning, might have even gone above 20. And at that temperature, unfortunately for a marathon, for an ultra race in the mountains, it's going to result in a 1 to 2% at least drop off in performance. And in that particular race, it meant going from a 258 to a 302. And while it was a PB performance from Michael, absolutely it was, unfortunately, we just didn't get the reward from the time because of that heat impact that it had. So it really is, it's so important, isn't it?
It's very important. It's something we see all the time, also with our ultra runners and our hill runners. More often, when people go away to Southern Europe and the high mountains, the Pyrenees, Alps, and so on, what they come when something goes a little bit awry, it's usually more to do with temperature than altitude. That's been my experience. There's more athletes who come and tell me that the temperature just got to them, especially because of where we come from. They think generally that particular. For every degree Celsius that your body temperature rises above what's considered optimal, you lose 1.5 to 3%, depending on the individual and depending on how much you've heat acclimatized, which is what we'll talk about today, and event
Yeah, that's a
duration.
lot, isn't
So
it?
your
That's massive.
optimal was that on?
That's massive. That's a lot, isn't it? I
Isn't
mean,
it? Yeah,
yeah,
it's
really, really high.
like your optimal temperature for the core in endurance performance is very similar to a light fever, actually. It's 38.5 to 39 degrees Celsius,
Yeah.
and it begins to degrade significantly once it gets over 39.5. Now, it's not something that most people have been able to measure, which we'll talk a little bit before. But you probably, if you've ever had a fever, or if you've ever run and you're familiar with generally how warm you feel, you know it. And when you get up to about 4.5, 41 degrees, unacclimated athletes can see performance drop of 5 to 10% plus. So that, as you say, that's enormous. Just do the calculation, like a 3 hour marathon, but just because it's easy to calculate with, right? That is 180 minutes. If we take 10%, that's 18 minutes. So it could be as bad as that in
Yeah.
some cases.
But the good news is, Rennie, that this is trainable. We can teach the bodies how to deal with it.
Yeah, and so what caught my attention, because I think we might have touched on this subject before, but I nearly forget some of our own topics at this stage because we're so in podcast.
Yeah,
So,
5 years on the go now, Rennie, we are.
yeah, there you go, right? So no one can remember all that, and it's no harm to revisit a topic because new things come out. And one thing I was struck with was that there's very, very recent research that's been done that show they used to think that at around 40 degrees Celsius, everybody just had to slow down, even the best trained elites. And that's because it was actually very, very hard, as you can imagine, to measure the temperature inside a person while they run. But they found sensors to do it. I think it was something like swallowing pills or something, you know, with sensors on it. And they managed to find out that the athletes that were more successful in warm races had an ability to push their core temperatures higher than was previously thought. So the record I think they found was 105.8 degrees Fahrenheit, which is just over 41 degrees Celsius. So that means they call this thermal tolerance. So it means it's a trainable thing, not fixed. So how much can you gain from it? Well, just to get a bit of an idea, the human body basically is extremely inefficient in how it converts our food and our, you know, our sugar reserves, our fat reserves to energy. So when it burns food, only 20% goes to forward motion in endurance exercise. The other 80% are turned into heat in your body. So if you can imagine that, you already have to deal with quite a lot in terms of the body needs to dissipate. It's a bit like a car, right? If you drive a car very, very fast and you don't have enough water in the car, then it'll overheat too quickly. Also, well, how could you fix that? Well, you could find a way to, you know, put more coolant in the car. You could drive it a bit slower when it's warm. So it's a little bit like that with the human body, except that we can actually, because heat stress is something the body is dealing with all the time, you know, it's always trying to dissipate all this extra heat that it's creating. You can, with systematic training in heat and some heat protocols after training, you can expand your blood volume. You can get greater cardiovascular efficiency. You can get better mitochondrial function, believe it or not. And you also lower your perception of effort, so the subjective and psychological things about it. So this is what really caught my eye, was that the guy who was looking into this, he was the author of a book that's fairly recent called The Norwegian Method, called Brad Cope. He said he reckoned if people had known how important this was, it would have been one of the first fields studied rather than lactate. You know, people would have studied heat and temperature, but it's only actually in the last 10 years or so there's been huge interest in this area.
It sounds like, Renee, that if we can get to use some of the benefits of using heat training adaptations in our own training, and if we can get the benefit from it, it's just as powerful, if not more powerful, than all the one percenters that we often talk about and we see online and we see popping up on our social media feeds about whether it's supplementation, recovery boots, altitude tents. This one here can allow us to capture a lot of low-hanging fruit that will make massive, massive improvements in our performance. And Rennie, I'm sure the listeners know that I've been living now in a very hot climate since 2011, but I regularly go home to race. And I'd say, Rennie, that the average temperature that I train at is probably about 23, 24 degrees. And I try not to train above 28 because I just think that that's too hot. But when I do go home to race in Ireland, typically say for cross-country races over the winter or road races in the summer, Rennie, I feel like I'm flying on the road. I really do. And I've probably got an overall better set of results nearly over the last 10 years than I did when I was actually living in the normal cooler climate of Ireland. And it's very, very similar. I often compare it when I'm talking about it with friends and so on, that it's like coming from altitude down to sea level, that when I come from, running in 24, 25 degrees every day to running in a cool Irish 13 or 14 degrees, it just feels so much easier. It really does. So if we can apply some of the methods to get this heat adaptation, we will get massive gains. And maybe, Rennie, you might maybe bring us through some of that methodology that we can apply, on a week-by-week basis to try and get these massive benefits.
Yeah, because even at cooler temperatures, you get these benefits. So as you say, it's a bit like altitude training, you know, and a lot of people go out of their way to go and do altitude training. So if you actually could do it, do something that will give you a lot of the same benefits, not exactly the same, but a lot of the same benefits. And they work in cool races too. It's not just for hot races.
Oh,
Why
yeah.
wouldn't you do it? So what you describe, Owen, is the best, okay? Chronic low-level exposure year round. And that's it kind of goes without saying it, you know. So it's a little bit like when they say live high and train low with altitude. That's better than going on an altitude camp. It's just better to always be in an environment. Although some people might say if you're always living in the heat, the quality of your training could suffer, as you probably see sometimes, Owen. It's hard to run as fast.
I do, and I see it especially when I extend out the long runs. Say if I'm training, say for a marathon, for example, when I have to go, say above 2 hours, or my interval or tempo sessions are long ones. That's when it becomes very, very difficult, and you can no longer really do those sessions in 25 degrees. You got to get out first thing in the morning, which can be hard, you know, when you have kids and work and what have you. So it isn't all easy sailing. If you do live in that type of hot climate, it can become very, very difficult. And just before you go on, Rennie, what I would say is that sometimes if you're exposed to heat for too long. And you often maybe see this with the East Africans when they go to cross-country races in the winter. They have their hats on them and they've got long sleeve singlets on them, where everybody else just is in a pure singlet and shorts. That I have noticed when I've gone back to race in the wintertime, I'm the only one in the field who's wearing a hat, you know, which is very funny because, of course, you know, I'm from Ireland, but I can no longer deal with an Irish winter after being here for so long. And then from a performance point of view, for the first time, when I actually saw a negative impact on the performance about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, when I did the Dublin 2023 marathon, that for the first time ever, the 9 or 10 degrees that morning actually began to hurt the body, as in I was getting a headache because my head was so cold. I took my hat off after about a mile or so, flung it into the crowd, and I really suffered as a result. So you can be overexposed as well. You've got to be careful, but nothing to worry about if you're living back home.
Yeah, we could do several podcasts about cold adaptation because obviously that's it's very similar, right? It gives very different benefits. So cold adaptation is more about keeping circulation to the extremities when the body is exposed to a temperature it considers a threat. You know, and I had a very recent experience with that because I went swimming in the lake twice here on over the, you know, very excited with the sun and everything. But the water is still only 12 degrees, you know. So that's why you can hear today my voice is a little bit husky because there was a lot of cold water for 30 minutes to just go through the system. So like with heat and cold, same thing, all environmental stresses, you need to not chase them blindly. You know, it's about kind of layering it in and slowly allowing your body to become more resistant, not just stacking it on top of lots of other stresses that you have. So in terms of heat specifically, how could you do it if you don't go away, which is obviously an option. You know, you could go for a few weeks to somewhere hot and you could train. I've done that actually. It works quite well. It lasts a month or two, those effects, which could be enough for a good summer season. But generally, if you want to do it all the time, really your friend is hot baths, sauna, and indoor training. So the way you would do that is you would go for your regular run and you would generally only do it for zone one and two, maybe a little bit of kind of moderate zone three, where not for hard sessions, that would be fairly extreme. You would do the training and then you would straight after the run within 15 to 30 minutes either go in the sauna or you would sit in a hot bath in your house. Because your body temperature is already heightened after the run, you know, so it'll be up around that 39 degrees maybe, and then you're trying to bring it up further and you try and stay in 15, 30 minutes. You know, and obviously if you have never been in a sauna before and things like this, play with it. You know, don't sit there and suffer just because you're on the clock. You know, definitely once it starts to be more uncomfortable than you're comfortable with, it's time to get out, you know. So
And then if it is going well for you, Rennie, what you could do is when you come out of the sauna, you actually maybe wait 15 or 20 minutes before you rehydrate. And instead of a cold shower, which we typically do, you have another hot shower. And that just continues to elevate the body temperature for another little while, just to get those extra bonus percentage points in terms of the adaptations.
yeah, some people consider it a bit cheating to go in the cold shower. I use it a lot when I go in the sauna because I like the contrast. Again, that's a different thing. It's not really but if you it is a bit cheating because you don't teach your body to cool itself down. And it's similar with cold adaptation. A lot of people then they go straight in the warm shower. And as well, that can be a bit you're not teaching the body then to slowly reheat itself. You know, of course, if it's an emergency, it's very different. So that is the That's kind of two ways to do it. And I think that's nice because you do a lot of easy runs. That means there's a lot of opportunities to do it. You might have 4 or 5 days a week that could be suitable. So it's only a question of whether you have a hot bath or a sauna nearby. So just a little bit of planning there. The other option is you can overdress or layer. And that's particularly effective if you're indoor on your treadmill. So that only works if you're running on treadmills. I wouldn't go out of my way to get one or buy one just for this. But if it's something you're already using, you will have noticed that you're a lot warmer inside because of the lack of ventilation and less airflow. So that could be a way to get a bit, you could even turn on the heating if you wanted, and whatever if the room you have goes up to 22 degrees, for instance, that'd be easy done. But layering is what I always thought that's what the Kenyans were doing when I saw them warm up before the Snowden race, but they were actually just cold in Wales. But it is when you see an athlete that looks like they are serious athletes, but for some reason they're jogging around in a full set, in full tracksuit. If it's not a cold day where they're trying to keep warm, that is probably because they are trying actually to increase their heat stress. So again, that's fairly easy. Okay, I know it takes a bit the fun out of that run. Maybe you'll be a little bit slower. Maybe when I see a hot day outside, I really want to just take off everything, get as much sunshine as possible, right? And there's the space for that because you need your vitamin D too, and it's good to get sun exposure on your chest, and other places that doesn't get it much at all the whole year. So you should still take those opportunities. So maybe this is better for the kind of middling days, where there's not gorgeous sunshine, but it's kind of a reasonable temperature for Northern Europe. And if you put maybe two, three layers on, you're going to sweat quite a bit once you start running, because that's often the trigger you're looking for. The same in the sauna and the same in the bath. The moment the sweat starts prickling out of your skin, that core is getting really hot because the body is trying to sweat it off. So you're actually getting a result from that point.
And then there's other things like, say, hot yoga, Bikram, heated studio cross training that we can use as well. But as you just began to touch on there are some just safety measures that you need to take into account when you are, doing runs in layered clothing, doing big sessions when you're trying to get those heat adaptations. There's a couple of things that I think that you wanted to go through in terms of just to keep an eye on, to make sure that you're not hindering overall good health. For example, you don't want to lose too much weight in any of these big heat sessions as well.
No, we can't yet monitor it easily. So you have to use RPE. So how, and you could log that if you wanted to. How warm did it feel? How unpleasant was it on a scale of 1 to 10? Monitors are on the way. There's a Swiss company called Core that is kind of leading the way, but it would be prohibitively expensive for a non-elite at the moment. But as with all technology, it'll probably only be a few years. And you could you a lot of gadgets would probably have some kind of sensor, so you could actually track. Okay, I'm getting very close to 41 degrees Celsius now, core temperature. That's enough. I'm going to stop here. The other precautions, of course, is making sure you're properly hydrated. Make sure you use electrolytes, and that you do it in steps. That you don't jump from never having done any heat adaptation to just taking it to an extreme. And then watch something I find is heat stress can sometimes create kind of a false fatigue. I had that after our little run a few years ago on Reventano, and when we were out running in the heat of the mountain at noon there in La Palma, I got very fatigued after that. And it wasn't the run, it was just the amount of heat we took there. And I had to go home and just lie in the pool for a while, to let to let it dissipate. So that's something to watch. So it's a little bit like with training. If you do a training session that's too hard, in the next few days, you usually notice.
I often notice it myself, and I just touched upon weight there, that you do have to be careful not to lose too much. And I'd often go out on a big long run at the weekends and say I might start off at 69 kilos and come back and be hitting 65 point something, which is, over 4% loss in body weight.
Yeah.
And that's just probably double the amount you should really be using. And I probably need to just up my game a little bit in those long runs in terms of taking on water, because I in Ireland, I don't think you necessarily really need to be taking on water on, say, a normal 2 hour run in the Phoenix Park on a normal day. But if you're in hot temperatures or if you're applying any of the heat protocols that we're talking about, you probably do make sure that you're getting some water into you and you're not coming back 4% less body weight than when you left the house.
Yeah, that's actually a good way to you could weigh yourself before if you have the time, before and after. So 2% is kind of the limit for what's considered like reasonable training, you know. So that's something you could calculate and make a habit if you thought that was easy. And then you can look out for markers, you know, of overreaching with this, you know, as I say, if you get a lot of fatigue after, if your mood dips, if you have brain fog, you know, then you want to back off the heat work for 2 to 3 days at least. And as I said already, you don't want high intensity plus heat load. You know, maybe if you were very advanced with it, you could start practicing that, but that's considered very advanced, so it's not a starting point. You can do it. You know, I said that 10 to 14 days before is time enough if you want to get some response, but a better protocol would be six to 7 weeks, 6 to 8 even. So if you do it that way, you know, if you wanted to start right now for the Leinster League, so that by kind of first week of July, you're super heat adapted. You could start now 2 weeks where you introduce heat gently just to get used to it all. So you'd probably be starting with 10, 15 minutes, you know, and then because you will build eventually maybe to 30 minutes sitting in a hot tub or in a sauna. And then you have 4 weeks after that where you make it really consistent and you make it progressive. So just remember that the first 2 weeks, you're just trying to get used to what it's all about and you wouldn't have any particularly high targets. And then the last 3 weeks after that, so that would be from week 7, 8, 9, you just want to maintain it. So that's the same as with maintaining normal training. You reduce the frequency where you do this heat adaptation and you prepare your race readiness instead, you know, because you don't want a lot of fatigue, obviously, to kind of carry into the races.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Rennie. Well, I think plenty of food for thought there for the listeners, and that will help people get ready. Just in case, I think if we ever hit that Irish record of 33.3 degrees Celsius, which was believe Rennie was recorded not in the era of climate change, but back in 1887 in June 26th in Kilkenny Castle, 33.3 degrees. So hopefully after listening to the last 15 or 20 minutes or so, we'll be a little bit more ready should we have to encounter that this summer.
Yeah, fingers crossed, though. And for now, we're just enjoying that we finally have some proper sunshine up here on the Irish shores.
Exactly. Okay, listen, Rennie, thanks a million for popping on. And best of luck commentating on the live feed of Transvolcania this weekend. Enjoy.
Thank you. And yes, we begin with the first little, the vertical in 3 hours. So yeah, I'm going to go away now and drink a cup of tea and save the rest of my voice.
Brilliant. A cup of tea and a cup of coffee just to get the brain on high alert. Enjoy, Rennie.
All right, thank you, Owen.
Take
Cheers.
care. Bye-bye. Our special guest this week is Ross Donovan, who last weekend at the Waterfall Trail Running Festival smashed out a new course record in the 130-kilometer race. Let's hear all about it. Ross Donovan, new record holder of the 130K race in the Waterfall Trail Running Festival. Ross, you're very, very welcome to the show. How's the recovery going, mate?
Yeah, going very well. Going very well. Kept moving all week in work, so you know, it helps. It helps.
Super. And Ross, tell us, it's such a spectacular race down there that Simon and his team put on in Waterfall. When did you realise that you are going to get the win and even a fantastic course record as well? I'm not even too sure if you were aware that the course record was going to be smashed or even what it was, if that was a target. But when did you begin to realise that it was going to be a special day for you? And dare I say it, Ross, the best result of your career to date?
Yes, you would be correct in saying that. Yeah, no, it just went really well, I suppose. I was feeling very in control the whole day through the night. I suppose in the past, I'd say in a few couple of races like Kerry or maybe Barra way back, I've been guilty. You know, like many do, I just get too excited maybe, and you go out way too fast, and then, you know, kind of the shit hits the fan, and you're not very in control maybe for the second half of the race. And I think I paced it very well, and yeah, it was comfortable the whole time. So I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the last lap, you know, just as much as the first one.
Yeah, it's three laps, isn't it? And so did
It
you go
is.
into the last lap in the lead, Ross? Were you in the lead from what point
Yeah,
in
so
the race?
myself and Owen were well, we were in a there was a group of say 6 or 7 of us until we hit the climb up to Eagles, and then myself and Owen kind of went off ahead. And I remember Sean telling me all the time, like, just don't be going out in front, don't go too fast. And I realized I was out in front, but I felt fine. There was nothing, my heart rate wasn't spiking or anything like that.
Yeah.
So we were together, I think, for a good two laps on the course. And then I think we came into the aid station back in Waterville, and I just made it very quick. I was in and out in a few minutes, I think. I think he was there for maybe 8 or 9 minutes, I heard. And I think I took that chance then just to kind of push. And Paddy, one of the lads from Cherry Orchard, kind of just gave me a heads up that if I wanted to do it, it was then. So we kind of
Hey,
just
super.
worked hard on that last lap, and just don't think he caught me again then for the rest of it.
Yeah, and there was a good, what, 40-minute gap or so by the time we got to the finish line. A brilliant race, and Ross, sounds like you executed it superbly well. For the listeners just that don't know the detail of the race, it starts, I think, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then you would have finished at around 7 p.m. on the Sunday, I think, after the Saturday afternoon start. Yeah. What's it like, Ross, running through the night there? Because 15 hours, so you've got the whole of Saturday night, Sunday morning to run through. How do you handle the night running? It's something that I've never done.
Yeah, no,
I'm not
I
sure
don't
if I'm
mind
having
it,
a
to be
good
honest.
sport or not.
Yeah, I'm f fairly comfortable in the nights, to be honest. Like, I've done the Kerry now a couple of times, and Beara, and like I said, I like in the past done a lot of camp and hill walk, and so fairly comfortable running at night. I probably was beneficial down there because it was so warm during the day. So, once the sun went down, like, we got a bit of respite. If we had to do those 2 second loop in the heat, possibly a third, would have been a different story altogether, I would have said.
Yeah. If you can, Ross, can you describe what that course is like and Waterville? You know the Kerry Way well now. You've been down there racing a couple of times, I think, with the Kerry Way Ultra, and down in Waterville this time. Can you try and describe to us what those trails down there are like? I was down there once before, and it was just a beautiful spot. It's
Yeah,
amazing, isn't
it's a
it?
big variety of stuff, especially on that loop. Like, you start at the beach there in Waterville, you have the bit of mountains over Cumacista down into Derrynane, there's beaches, rocks, then you're back onto, trails up a ramp all the way up to Eagles, and then the other side, like the lads who run the BMF there in the winter down that far side of Eagles, I can only imagine what it's like in the depths of winter.
Yeah.
But we were blessed down there. Now we had a good dry spell before the race, so it really did help the time massively. It was fairly runnable most of it. Yeah, just really helped us kept moving,
Yeah. You've had 2 seconds in some of the big trail races in Ireland, and with the at the Glendalough Tucker Trail, the Barrow Way that you mentioned back in 2023. That was the first big win, Ross. And how did that feel over the last couple of days? How has that settled? Are you full of confidence, raring for the next one? Are you delighted with the win and hoping to push on again?
Ah, yeah, well,
How do you take the
we're
win
going
feel?
back down to Beara now. Myself, the girlfriend, and the dog are off on Wednesday, so we're back down there for the race on Friday. So she's been very good over the races I've done. She's always been at every crew stop, so I have to say,
Wow.
credit to her.
What's the distance of the next one? So what's the distance of that race?
So that's the 100 miler. That's the 160 down in Beara now, the Beara Way, the
Wow.
Emma race.
Wow. So you're going again for that, some
Going
turnover.
again, yeah. Best and worst idea I ever had, but the body feels good, to be honest. So I'm kind of I'm looking forward to going back down and racing now.
Yeah. Well, Ross, tell us, what are the secrets to that success? What are the secrets to be able to knock out a 130K, take the win, and have the mental strength, the mental enthusiasm to go back down and do it all again? Because I think, a lot of people might, have a race like the Waterville race, take the win, use that as a bit of a peak for the season, then back off, maybe go again in the late summer, but you're going straight into it. How are you staying healthy? How have you built up the strength to be able to get through two big races like this?
Mix of a bunch of stuff now. To be honest, I just wanted to do the two races when I heard about the two of them. So I just thought, why not? If it's doable, well, I may as well just go for it. Like I said, work helps. Like, I mean, I'm doing a strength session nearly every day in work, and then I'm coming home and I'm doing my runs. I eat well. I'm asleep by 9 o'clock, and up the same time every morning. Pretty strict on that. And just, yeah, just generally look after myself,
Yeah, I'd say that sleep routine helps a lot. What time do you get up at? If you're going to bed at 9, what time are you getting up at?
I'm up at 5:30, 6:00 every morning nearly.
Yeah, but you're still getting a good 8 hour sleep, which
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
so important.
Big time, big time. I think Leanne was on before. She was talking about how much sleeping she does, and it's true. Like, it's the magic.
Every weekend over, the winter into the springtime, Ross, are you doing all day sessions in, I think you're based around Dublin, Wicklow area. Are you
Yeah.
doing big sessions? Oh, sorry, not sessions, long days in the mountains every Saturday, every Sunday,
Yeah.
or how
Like, I
does it
think
work?
now in the 4 weeks there leading up to Waterville, I think I was averaging about 140 maybe a week, with varying amounts of elevation. And I was just trying to keep that mileage high. It's hard with the physical job I have, to do much other than getting in and getting out the door and just trying to put some miles down. So it's really just stacking kind of mileage when it comes up to races, when it's coming up to races for me.
Are you having any intensity rest to those sessions over the course of the week, or is it all just time on feet, time up in the mountains,
It
lots of
is. There's a
top
few. I
ends
mean,
in too?
I'd keep a few of them flat and go down around the local parks and just have it, increase the pace for those. But other than that, it's pretty simple. It's either a big long days in the hills, or I'll go out and just maybe do one or two slow or fast flat sessions a week,
Okay, super. And you pretty much, I think, Ross came in straight away into the big distances with the, was it the Maurice Mullins, the 80K back in 2023 is one of your first races that are certainly coming up on when I go to look at your results online. Did you start off at, with 5Ks, 10Ks, any cross country racing, or did you just go straight in
Zero,
to the
yeah.
big
No,
ultras?
I just kind of, yeah, I heard about the races. I couldn't tell you from where, but I just heard about the IMRA setup, and then I heard the Maurice Mullins was coming up. I think it was a few months after I got the smell of it, and I signed up for it, and that was, yeah, it was the first kind of first race, really.
Really,
I
the
couldn't tell.
8K was wow.
Yeah. I didn't. I've like other than a 1500 maybe back in school was the only other running race I've done. I think I've done. I did a Dublin marathon now. I have done a Dublin marathon, but in terms of trail running and ultras, it was the Maurice Mullins and then Beara and then the Kerryway.
Yeah, and you came in, I think, with a top 15 run that day in the Maurice Mullins, 13th out of 41, as a debut over the ultra distances. So not a bad start.
Not bad.
What type of time did you do in the Dublin Marathon, Ross? Or was that just to get it done, like a lot of people do? Or did you treat
Oh,
it
I think
as a
I was at
competitive
3 hours 20 minutes or something the year I did it, something like
race?
that.
Okay, so that shows that there's just talent there. There was talent there without maybe focusing too much on it. Hence, you can see how you've moved through the ranks so well over the last couple of years on the mountains, maybe.
Maybe so, yeah, maybe so.
Ross, I believe you've signed for a new running club. You're the super new signing of a certain club. Tell us about that.
No, it was well, me and Sean had chatted about it a couple of times. I actually know the lads from the running club years. I used to own a small coffee truck that operated down beside the sea here in Dublin, and they used to actually pass me every other weekend, big group of them, and they used to buy all the coffees, all the cakes and all the rest of it. And I actually know them originally from there, and then through the running I kind of circle back around, and I've gotten to know them again. And I mean, I spend a good bit up in the hills with Sean and Philly from Cherry Orchard, so it just kind of felt like the right thing. And the lads are great; like they had my back down there in Waterville in terms of crewing and stuff. You know, my girlfriend's been at every other crew stop at every other race, so she unfortunately couldn't make this one. But the lads were great down there, and you know, got me in and out.
Yeah, I remember. I think we actually had Sean Meehan, just for the listeners, and we had Sean on. I think it was last year after he got a win down in Waterford as well. He came on and he spoke to us on the podcast, and he was great. And he did speak about that camaraderie in the club and how the Cherry Orchard lads were there cheering him on, and they inspire him to do such great things.
Yeah.
It seems like a
I got
good
the full
crew to have.
Sean Meehan show pony treatment there the day before the race. It was good.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, tell us, Ross, after the big win there last weekend, what are your plans going forward? Would you like to continue to make an impact in the Irish racing scene and perhaps even maybe thinking about abroad as well?
Yeah, I haven't thought too far ahead, but I mean, you know, for the me, like we're going to Barr on Friday. I think I'm gonna do the Tucker Trail. Then there's Kerry. I'd love to do the Ecro Trail this year. I've missed it the last 2 years, and because
Yeah.
it's kind of a local one around here, it'd be good to do. But my girlfriend's from Croatia. I'd love to do Istria maybe in the near
Yeah.
future,
Super.
and I don't know, go from there.
Yeah, super. Maybe two or three quick fire questions before we go, Ross. Your
Yeah.
shoe of choice for racing dodges there. What shoes were you in there last weekend?
I was in the Tecton X3s, but I've been in everything. I was using the ASICS, the Trabuco Max there for the last few, which were great as well.
Okay, super. Gear of choice. What kit do you have on you? Any nice fancy jacket in the
No, I have a Mackinac.
backpack? And last one, nutrition of choice as you're going through the Kerry Way on your way to victory. What are you getting into?
I've taken a liking to those precision gear now, which is great. I find it works for me,
Yeah.
and just heaps of bananas.
Really,
Yeah.
yeah. Fantastic, fantastic. And maybe last one, best recovery tip, seeing as you've put in such a good recovery this week and you're going again now for the 100 miler. Best recovery tip.
Scalding hot bath and a load of ice cream.
Yeah, and lots of sleep.
That's it, yeah.
Listen, Ross, thanks a million for coming on. You don't have the coffee shop anymore, no?
No, I don't. No, I don't. Not unfortunately,
That's a pity. That's a pity. That's a pity.
no.
Well, she definitely needs a good carpenter, and they can maybe get in touch. So, and listen,
That's it.
we look forward to following your career over the next couple of years. And I'm no doubt, well, I'm sure we'll see plenty more podiums across the country and maybe even abroad made as well. Ross, congratulations on a super win and a new course record last weekend down in Waterford.
Thanks very much, John.
Super. Okay, chat to you, mate. Take
Bye
care.
now.
Well, there we have it, guys. That's a wrap for this week. Thanks to Rennie for his contribution, as always. And thanks a million to Ross there for coming on. And congrats again to Ross on the win. And indeed to all the runners and all the organisers and all the team down in Waterfall on what was a very, very special weekend of trail running. As Simon, I believe, said, they're not trying to be the best or the biggest in the world. They're just trying to be the best that they can be. And they certainly do that year after year now. Guys, we're looking forward to seeing you all in action again next year down in Waterford. A special good luck as well to all of the teams, the team captains, the team volunteers, and the race organizers for the upcoming Wicklow Way Relay next Saturday, the 17th of May. 8 legs, 104 kilometers, great competition up front for the win, and great crack all throughout the field. It is the Grand National of the Irish Mountain Running Racing Calendar. Book it in, everybody. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go.